When was your last checkup? No, not you. Although that's important, too. But when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Chevy Drive Chicago. Schedule a service appointment at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer.
Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. We're talking about the opening of the Obama Presidential Center. The ceremony, the press preview tomorrow opens to the public Friday. But this week was a big one for Barack Obama in 2008, wasn't it, Anna?
Definitely was, Bob. Good morning to you. This week, 2008, let's go back there. Then presidential candidate Barack Obama delivered a bold Father's Day speech from Chicago that was loved, it was hated, it was analyzed, it was overanalyzed, and ultimately became one of the defining moments in his run for presidency. Senator Obama delivered the speech, you'll recall, Bob, during Sunday services at a Southside megachurch. They had over 10,000 people in this congregation. It was huge. And Obama had just emerged from the primary at this point. He was beginning his general election campaign against John McCain. And at this point in time, he was being painted as an extremist. Recall the controversy boiling over Reverend Wright. Obama had parted ways with his home church over some of Wright's polarizing statements that became public. And this speech was a way to differentiate, Senator Obama from Reverend Wright. It was centrist. It was bold. He stood in the pulpit to deliver it of an all-black church and called out absent fathers on Father's Day. We pulled a clip from that speech back in 2008.
Boy, I remember the controversy now. That was something. Yeah.
It was something. Think about doing that at that moment in time. It was a tough love message, if you think about it, and it served the purpose of a political reset and also just letting people know who he was and who Reverend Wright was, not the same person. Centrist voters embraced it, but recall, Bob, that the Reverend Jesse Jackson did not like it. He was caught on a hot mic on CNN criticizing Obama for talking down to regular folks. Ultimately, that congregation did cheer him, like, enthusiastically. So the public seemed to embrace it. He just received a lot of criticism from what he said.
Yeah, he sure did. Well, in Manhattan, big parade tomorrow. But this week in 2010, we had our own Chicago parade, didn't we?
New York's got nothing on us. We know that, Bob. And just to go back to this moment in time to prove it. This week in 2010, the Sea of Red. Do you remember what Michigan Avenue looked like for the Blackhawks Stanley Cup championship parade? I mean, it was crazy. No less than 2 million people showed up to pour out on the parade route. They were at the rally site. They were all over the city wearing red. Jonathan Taves at one point looked at the crowd and said, "I didn't know there were this many people in Chicago. Where'd y'all come from?" And it was just incredible because at that point, remember, we had waited a half century for a Stanley Cup. So June 11th, 2010, the day after the Hawks clinched that overtime win against Philadelphia, they excited with this epic parade. And the Stanley Cup started its incredible journey across our city. I just remember the excitement so many of us do when you got to see the cup or you caught a glimpse or maybe got to touch it or get near it. You remember they had the open-air buses with the players going down the double-decker buses down the parade route. But we have a clip here we pulled at the end when they had the big rally and the players came up to the microphone. Patrick Kane, we're going to hear from him. But first, Duncan Keith, Bob, who, don't forget, had lost 10 teeth in that Stanley Cup run when he took a puck to the mouth. So he stepped up to the mic. He was still talking just fine through his toothless delivery. And here's what he told the crowd.
Patrick Kane there. What a great group of guys. Great to hear that again.
It's so fun to think back to that moment. Remember the cab driver reference? He'd gotten in a bit of trouble with the cab driver the summer before. So he was just restating his love, professing his love for all cab drivers.
Yeah. Another big sports story happened in June. This was 1994, and what a surprise when Rhino retired.
Yeah, you'll recall this one really well. So many Cubs fans will. Sports fans across the city were basically in mourning June 13th, 1994. Just 8 months after Michael Jordan said goodbye to basketball for the first time, another sports icon, future Hall of Famer Ryne Sandberg, abruptly announced that he was leaving the Cubs and taking early retirement. Total shock for a lot of Cubs fans. Rhino was 34 years old, still had $15 million left on his contract at that time. Also recall that both Jordan and Sandberg were number 23 jerseys. So it was a double whammy. The stories all covered it that way. First Michael Jordan, now Ryan Sandberg. What's next? Can we anyone ever wear a number 23 again? Interesting to go back and look at that sentiment. Ryan Sandberg, by the way, had cited burnout. Remember, he had said that he lost his edge, the edge that it takes to play baseball, and said he wanted to spend time with his family. There were stories about marital issues that had become public. So he walked away from the game and $15 million after 10 years with the Cubs. So much joy he brought to fans, so many thrills. But he told us it was over and delivered it personally during a news conference after that final game. We pulled a clip from that news conference.
Well, yeah, his personal life got better, and he came back in a big way, didn't he?
Yeah, both Ryan Sandberg and Michael Jordan returned to their to their teams. So it wasn't quite as tragic as it seemed, but it did seem that way, you know, at the time.
Sure did. More from Anna coming up, and some Rolling Stones Chicago history as well.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
This week in 1964, the Stones were on Michigan Avenue, weren't they, Anna?
It was their first visit, Bob, to Chicago ever. So go back to the summer of 64. The British invasion was reaching a fever pitch. The Beatles had taken America by storm. And now the Rolling Stones were here. Another group of English lads, no one quite sure what to make of them yet. And they came for a recording session, as you well know, at Chess Records, where they jammed with Muddy Waters and just, you know, really just had the time of their lives. But then there's this weird part that is lesser known. They held a bizarre outdoor press conference on Michigan Avenue right outside the Tribune Tower. There's some great photos in the Tribune archives of them sitting there in their folding chairs, super casual, just the Stones and their manager. They rolled up some, they pulled out some folding chairs, and they just kind of sat right along Michigan Avenue and talked. The Tribune story was hilarious, though, Bob, in retrospect, because they focused on their hair and their messy appearance, describing them as shaggy-haired and unkempt. They were looking haggard with overly tight trousers, the Tribune wrote.
Uh-huh.
And the actual headline said they said they wear their hair long and shaggy, 2 inches longer than the Beatles. So this really funny thing happened that I had no idea about. A barber came down from a downtown hotel, ran over to the press conference with shears in hand, offered to the manager, "I will cut their hair and make them look cleaner." The manager, of course, declined, but then the Tribune headline said, "Barber gives scare to five fuzzy singers."
Oh, man.
Incredible. They're talking about the Stones.
Yeah, and they loved Chess Records, and they really wanted to go to the studio where their heroes like Muddy Waters made their favorite records. Well, it was this week in 1990 that a movie debuted in the Chicago area that had definite local connections, didn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, June 13th, 1960 is the date, Bob. Dick Tracy, the movie starring Warren Beatty and Madonna, premiered in Woodstock, Illinois, the hometown of the comic strip's creator, Chester Gould. He was a Tribune columnist and our cartoonist, I should say, who launched the detective strip in 1931. And to honor him, Woodstock drew these big Dick Tracy days and culminating in the big movie premiere. Warren Beatty and Madonna didn't make it. They went to the far glitzier premiere in Disney World a few days later. But Gould's family was there, and a real Chicago police captain named Dick Tracy, that was his actual name, no relation, to the strip. But here's a clip from a local interview we pulled with Chester Gould himself a few years after he retired from doing the Dick Tracy cartoon. After working for 45 straight years and never missed a deadline, he was at his family farm in Bull Valley, and he was taking a look back.
Wow. Wild to hear Chester Gould himself.
Yes. Yeah, for years they had a Dick Tracy museum, too, in Woodstock honoring him. But I think it's moved online since. But incredible career and impact on the world, really.
Oh, sure. Finally, it was, June 17th, 1994, and the World Cup in the headlines that day, too.
Absolutely. So a lot of your listeners may remember this one, or maybe were there, lucky enough to be there. Newsman Ryan Burrow is the one who reminded me of this, because he was there. June 17th, 1994, Chicago hosted the World Cup, and it took place at Soldier Field. The world was focused on Chicago, the first time the World Cup was held in the United States ever. So huge, huge for Chicago. Everyone from President Bill Clinton to Oprah to Diana Ross and Daryl Hall from Hall & Oates were there. Lots of celebrities, of course, turned out from the sports world as well. One of the most coveted tickets in town. It also turned out, Bob, to be one of the most newsworthy days of the year for the sports world. Think about this. You had the World Cup, the Knicks playing Game 5 in the NBA Finals, the Rangers Stanley Cup Parade. You had Arnold Palmer's final U.S. Open round. And O.J. Simpson chose that day to set out on his slow-speed chase in the white Ford Bronco. All on that day. ESPN later did an entire 30 for 30 on that day, simply titled June 17th, 1994, because so many things were happening. But a billion people had their eyes on Soldier Field, and only a few million, I think, looked away to watch the O.J. chase out of that number.
Yeah.
Still a pretty big audience.
I know. Larry King had a big audience, too, describing that Ford Bronco chase.
Oh,
this week in Chicago history. More next Wednesday. Thank you, Anna.